An explanation for what's shaping up to be merger mania. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We started today with news of a sopping wet blanket for the world economy. At a time that forecasters were expecting Japan's economy to grow, there's news it contracted by more than 2%. Coming off a previous weak quarter, we can now say Japan is in recession and can't be counted on to help the U.S. pump vitality into global commerce. On Mondays, we like to consult Julian Emanuel, who runs U.S. equity and derivative strategy at UBS Securities in New York. Hello, Julian.
Good morning, David.
Japan, recession, that is not what most market professionals and economists were expecting, despite their sales tax rise over there.
No, and it's clearly a minor cause for distress, but it really points out the U.S. is very much beholden to Japan and, of course, Europe getting their growth trajectories right, and this is an ongoing process. It's not going to take quarters. It's probably going to take years.
But at the same time, you see corporate America with these mergers in the last day taking bold moves despite the worry out there in the world.
Corporate America has an enormous amount of cash, and intelligent, opportunistic managements are taking events such as this decline in energy prices to really look hard at ways that they can synergize. And certainly the mergers that we saw in the oil patch today are a perfect example of how you can use, and as well as the individual investor, can use volatility to their advantage.
Yeah, we saw that big deal come to fruition between Halliburton and Baker Hughes for about $34 or $35 billion. And there's the other one in the pharmaceutical industry, Actavis, spending $66 billion to buy the maker of Botox. I mean, this is companies, you think, walking around with a lot of cash in their pockets?
You know, business is still good. CEO confidence is very high, and in an environment where we expect interest rates to eventually rise as the Fed gets more active, it's the perfect catalyst for M&A activity.
Julian Emanuel at UBS Securities, thank you.
Thank you.
Achievements of last week's Asia-Pacific Summit was a pledge to set up a network for countries to share information about corruption. China, which is in the midst of a sweeping crackdown on officials on the take, is trying to stop malefactors from taking refuge across borders. Internationally, measures of corruption are often derived from surveys. Are things getting more corrupt or less corrupt by you? That's useful, but researchers think they can do even better. Omer Gochekush is a professor of international economics at the School of Diplomacy at Seton Hall University. His new book is called Peculiar Dynamics of Corruption. He says there's an issue with people just asking people about how bad corruption is or is not.
Reputation is sticky.
It's sticky. Once an area has a sleazy reputation, it tends to stick. It's hard to shine up. Places with a reputation for being cleaner than the driven snow keep their reputation for a time, even when corruption might be creeping up. The opposite, it turns out, of what some see as the capital of politicians on the take, New Jersey.
We both live in New Jersey. We know that New Jersey has a very bad reputation. But then when you go and look at the actual numbers, we are not even in top 10.
So if perceptions about corruption take time to shift, are there other ways to supplement these measures? Gochekush and others have been thinking about this. Here's one insight. Could you comb through publicly available data to find telltale signs of corruption? Why not, Gochekush says, count fancy cars that are sold? Too many Mercedes, Porsches, Maseratis, given the amount of money people are supposed to be earning. Maybe that's a clue.
Why not look at luxury car sales in a number of countries? Take into account the level of income and distribution of income in those countries, and also see if they are doing more than their fair, quote-unquote, share.
See if they're buying more than their fair share. He mentions Greeks, for instance, buying more fancy cars than you'd think. Compare that to the Netherlands, where corruption is believed to be comparatively low.
If the corruption level in Greece was at the same level as in Netherlands, they were supposed to have 10 cars per certain number of people, but in reality it was 48.
You got that? Where'd the Greeks get the money to buy the more fancy cars per capita? Maybe tax evasion, maybe accepting bribes. And it's not just Greece. You could track this kind of data across all countries in the way the Internal Revenue Service might be interested to see who's buying yachts on their politician's salary in New Jersey. And Gocekus is thinking about other data tools. Are there clues about corruption when you track the amount of money that public officials are willing to accept when they quit their government work?
Versus they are willing to accept salaries in the private sector.
When an official goes to the infamous revolving door between government work and the private sector, maybe he or she just feels they're due a raise after low-paid government work, or maybe they want a private sector salary that helps them maintain a lifestyle to which they've become accustomed.
How much extra money they are generating by using their public office for their private gains, and that's basically the definition of corruption.
These new ways to track corruption are works in progress, but Professor Gocekus says it is crucial to track when money improperly changes hands in an economy. First of all, it's such a waste, but also corruption has been consistently shown to disproportionately hurt, the key word here is the have-nots, since it advantages people with the money to make bribes.
Corruption distorts prices, and you end up, you know, misallocating your resources. But most importantly, when we look at how corruption affects different groups, it's so clear that mostly have-nots are getting affected more.
Seton Hall University professor Omar Gocekus' book is called Peculiar Dynamics of Corruption. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.